Tokyo, Australia, Germany, Africa.
Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Well, darn. I hate it when a program begins with, well, darn. Apparently, I'm not on the air. Maybe. Maybe I am. Maybe I'm not. Somebody in the chat room, want to tell me if I'm on the air or not? Where's Jeremy when I need him? Minute past the hour of 6 p.m., I should be on the air. Mm-hmm. No, I think they would have heard me by now when I said in the chat room, let me know. Yeah, that's what I'm probably afraid of. Will in Chicago says, Bob, I'm hearing the workers' news segment. Stand by, please. Be right back. Listen to the drum roll for a minute. So, I'm waiting to hear back from Rick Smith to find out if they've turned off their streamer. No, God willing, Arthur. It will not be a 3-hour filibobster pantomime. Ack. Stand by some more, please.
Go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! really here this time. Sorry about that. Sorry about the 14-minute late start. I was actually here in time to start it, but we had one of those little periodic mix-ups that we have when the folks over at the Rick Smith Show, and it's not Rick, forget to turn off their side of the horn stream, which means that I can't get to my side. Yeah, but now everything's okay. Not sure what the solution is. But anyway, 15 minutes ago I was doing all this, so for those of you listening to the podcast going, what in the Sam Hill is... That's what. This is the horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you go if you want to jump into the chat room and join the merry band of real-time multimedia extravaganza havers. Good evening at the beginning of the program to Earther and Chugga Punch and Mr. Gibson, all capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderators Lottie and Sparky, who, being a third-stage guild navigator, has again folded space this evening to become Man Cave. Yeah. We are in session. Hallelujah. We're a little early for hallelujahs, but maybe not. It is Titanic Tuesday. Oh, hi. I'm Bob Kincaid. It is Titanic Tuesday on the horn. You may recall that on Tuesday, we set aside Tuesdays for those especially egregious examples of attempts at right-wing intellect, Titanic that they are. Thank you very kindly, Jeremy in Vermont. Loud and clear on TuneIn, Bob. I appreciate it. I think we have several good exemplars this evening. Now, I had marked, please, let's not get ahead of ourselves. Let's get the usual stuff out there. This program, of course, is not supported by any advertising. It is supported by the community who listens to the program. That's not to say that I won't convey the occasional message if you ask for it to be conveyed. But this is a community effort. I know, it would sound like ever so much more professional broadcasting if from time to time we would stop and have somebody, say Flush Flimball's voice saying, buy gold now, there's never been a better time to buy gold. Gold is your best hedge against inflation, buy gold now. You can do it easily by calling Buy Gold Now from the comfort of your mattress, which was developed using foam invented by NASA and is made by a Swedish company. And it is such a fine mattress you can drop bowling balls on it and pick the bowling ball up with your Oric vacuum cleaner. While listening to your Bose Wave Radio, personally endorsed by me, Flush Flimball, and in your opulent bedroom, floored by the fine people at Lumber Liquidators. You get the idea. Nope, none of that. Just y'all. And we try to raise $200 an evening. And there are no challenges on the table or anything along those lines. We're just trying to raise $200. And that would be awfully helpful. 10 at 20, 20 at 10, 1 at 200, 2. You know, remember, there's still a premium on the table for anybody who kicks in a have a show on me, an original movie poster from the film The Last Mountain. Remember, it's it can be autographed if you wish. It's right there for you. Just let me know in the message box on PayPal or shoot me an email and say, you know, it's coming via mail, whatever. Let me know. But in any 40 at 5, 5 at 40, etc., that's how we keep this all going. That's how we keep the bills paid. And things are taking shape. I've been doing a lot of tech work since I returned from my week away. upgrading and loading things and whatnot. But no, it's right there at the on the webpage, headonradionetwork.com. Egads, I just remembered. Got a note from John Fox. I have to pay the internet bill this evening because, you know, Australia, it means it's already tomorrow there. And that's going to be 100 and some odd bucks or so. So we really do kind of have to make the fundraising goal this evening. But anyway, just go to headonradionetwork.com and click on the tab Contribute, and you'll see the PayPal interface there. And get through all the filling out of stuff, and don't worry about the one that asks you, you know, which bus company you drive for and how often you sub in for Ralph Cramden. You can just blow by that and get to that page where you choose, you know, MasterCard, Visa, whatever. I don't think we do Diners Club. Or PayPal, whatever. Or by the U.S. Postal Service, you know, the Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WB 25801. And checks and money orders made payable not to Bob Kincaid, but to the Horn, because I never see him. That having been said, what I was heading toward a moment ago is that I had this one marked save for prayer meeting Wednesday, but if they're right, we won't be here for prayer meeting Wednesday. No, really. The Guardian, Adam Gabbett reporting over there, that the E-Bible Fellowship, and they certainly do sound like a group of experts to me, the E-Bible Fellowship has said that it's all over tomorrow, October the 7th. Of course, they didn't make clear which October the 7th. I mean, because, it's already October the 7th there in Australia and the rest of the other side of the world. Are y'all still there? Robert, are you there? Are y'all, I mean, check in. Tokyo, are we reaching? Hello? Hooty hoot. Yeah, that's the secret signal, you know, the hooty hoot. Because it's all done. The E-Bible Fellowship is headquartered somewhere near Philadelphia. And Chris McCann, who is the leader and the founder of the E-Bible Fellowship, which is described as an online gathering of Christians headquartered in Philadelphia, he says, according to what the Bible is presenting, it does appear that 7 October will be the day that God has spoken of in which the world will pass away. It'll be gone forever. Annihilated. Mm-hmm. This is because it was something that happened in the sky a few days ago. Wait a minute, we gotta have a reverb for this. Blood moon. Yeah. Oh, September the 27th. Because people who follow a Bronze Age god have Bronze Age superstitions. Yep. That was a lunar eclipse that was combined with a so-called supermoon. All of these things being absolutely predictable like clockwork because, well, the cosmos kind of works that way. This is just the latest crapture. But this doesn't say this is going to be a rapture. Now, I'm not sure if these guys are millennialists. It just says, yep, gone tomorrow. Maybe it's Jerusalem mean time. So that would mean that, what? Maybe about 6 hours? No. Now, wait a minute. Isn't it already tomorrow in Jerusalem, too? I mean, it's 6:24 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time here. And Greenwich Mean Time is 5 hours. And I think the European, Western European mainland is 6. Oh, no. Ron? Ron? Hey, Ron! Over in the sandbox. Ron! Afghanistan? Iraq? It's already all gone, I guess. Well, at least Afghanistan's getting some relief. Or maybe the Almighty's going to smite us by time zone. Sheesh. Idiots. Nope. Granted. Harold Camping predicted time and time again that God was going to smite us, but even though... And his last prediction was wrong about October 2011. What is it about October? Camping died in 2013 at age 93. Do you realize, I mean, talk about titanic intellect. Do you realize that every generation of Christians since the origins of the church, when they held all things in common, as Paul writes, Okay, Ron went to bed. Thank you, Carol. I was worried there for a minute. Yeah, I mean, it's like 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning there, 9, I don't know. But, okay, so he's in bed. Good. I was fretting. Yeah, Robert in Morgantown tells me it's already 1:25 a.m. on October the 7th in Jerusalem. It's getting confusing. But Harold Camping, but every generation of Christians, yep, this is it. He's going to be back this time. I mean, we're living in the time of the end times, and we're going to see Jesus appearing in the clouds. Hasn't happened yet. Sorry. Ain't likely to, neither. I mean, I only say this because dead, decomposed, itinerant, semi-literate rabbis tend to, I mean, you know, bodies at rest tend to stay at rest. And once you've been crucified real good, you tend to stay that way. None of the Spartacus folks got up after they'd had a good crucifying. And there were thousands of them. You'd think, you add that into the odd. No, it didn't happen. Yes. And like the rest of Christian humanity, Harold Camping went and took his dirt nap without seeing the return of Jeebus in the clouds. And this McCann goober relies on 2 Peter 3 saying that the loving creator of the universe will destroy the earth by fire because he promised he wouldn't ever do it again by water. Tell that to the folks in Columbia, South Carolina. Let's check in with 2 Peter 3 just to see what it's about. How long? Let's see. How long is this sucker? Oh, it doesn't go on for too long. This second epistle, beloved, I now write unto you, in both which I stir up your pure minds by way of remembrance. Well, isn't that some lovely language? That you may be mindful of the words which were spoken before by the holy prophets and of the commandment of us, the apostles of the Lord and Savior, knowing this first, that there shall come in the last days scoffers walking after their own lusts. Come here, lust. Here, lust. Come here, lust. Just taking lust at, yeah, lust. A little pit bull. And out for a walk. Walking after their lusts. and saying, where is the promise of his coming? For since the fathers fell asleep, all things continue. Now, the fathers died, buddy. All things continue as they were from the beginning of the creation. For this they willingly are ignorant of, that by the word of God the heavens were of old, and the earth standing out of the water and in the water. Yeah, okay. Whereby the world that then was, being overflowed with water, perished. But the heavens and the earth, which are now by the same word, are kept in store, reserved unto fire against the day of judgment and perdition of ungodly men. But, beloved, be not ignorant of this one thing, that one day is with the Lord as 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is as one day. The Lord is not slack concerning his promise. Okay, so the Lord is not a slacker or a hipster. Doesn't have one of those funny little hats with the two short brims. The day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night. Oh, for pity's sakes. I much prefer... Robert Frost. Yeah. Much more enjoyable than Second Peter. And one wonders what was wrong with the First Peter that they had to have a second one. Some say the world will end in fire, some say in ice. From what I've tasted of desire, I hold with those who favor fire, but if I had to perish twice, I think I know of enough of hate to say that for destruction, ice is also great and would suffice. Yeah. And again, it's not prayer meeting Wednesday. But I felt like we had to get that out there just in case. You know, goodbye, y'all! Just in case. Of course, Christianity's been wrong about the returning of Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi, ever since he left. But oddly enough, this is one of those places where getting... It's kind of like being a political pundit on TV. You don't have to get anything right. I mean, it's like being... Bill Kristol. Now, see, this is Bronze Age stuff. I mean, one of these days, the Earth will be destroyed. That's probably in the next, 7 billion years or so. And I don't mean like within that. No, it's like 7 billion years out. And if we haven't figured out a way to get off this rock by then, we got a problem. I mean, because when the sun goes nova, I mean, this is science. You know, it'll, you know, expand, and we'll get toasted. This planet will get toasted like a marshmallow, and it'll all be over. Because, you know, even stars are finite. But that's science. And your evangelical fundamentalists don't want nothing to do with no science. They've got their smartphones and their cars and everything, but they think that they're all run by demons and angels. Don't want nothing to do with no science. Oddly enough, however, I suspect the E-Bible Fellowship, which has meetings once a month, they've still got their meeting for November on the calendar. Mm-hmm. So like I said, I just wanted to get that out there. Well, okay, Devin. Devin says the Earth will fry in 5 billion years. 5 billion, 7 billion, you know, give or take. But this is all part of that larger thing about... you know, we've got to save the planet. Nah, bullshit. Planet's fine. It's a question of whether or not we're going to save that part of the planet upon which humanity resides for its ability to continue to exist. Mm-hmm. And that's why things like climate change matter. And the, you know, acidification of the oceans, and all that fun stuff. Right, right. I mean, I still think in about, I saw a science story, because I love this kind of stuff. The actual presence of proto-humans on this planet now goes back about 10 million years, some scientists believe. Some scientists, see, I've even been infected by the Fox-style handbook. But that's the kind of thing when you say that when you don't have the exact story right at hand. Everybody was all excited about Lucy when she pushed it back to 2 million years. It turns out she had ancestors too. And you know what? Poor Lucy, she didn't know the Lord Jesus Christ as her personal Lord and Savior. So we may have her bones in a museum, but by God, or a few of her bones, but the important part's frying in hell. Just ask a theologian. Like Mike Huxterby said last night toward the end of the program, we don't have a gun problem, we have a sin problem. And damned if I didn't see that repeated on Facebook today. Can right-wingers not come up with anything for themselves? Being authoritarians, I guess they just have to have someone to, well, say it for them so that they can parrot it. I give up. What happened to the boat? Thanks to National Petroleum Radio, I will never forget that story, that joke. Nope. By the way, before we jump into the rest of Titanic Tuesday, iceberg dead ahead. A couple of pieces of mail. One coming from our buddy Dennis down in Kentucky. We got the lawn mowed today. Dennis and I have been mowing the lawn together for a very long time now. Listen to last Friday's podcast. I can't understand people. I have an aunt who is crazy about T-Rump. Her husband served in World War II. He was wounded twice and was awarded the Bronze Star and the Silver Star. Her daughter served in Iraq. I sent a link about what T-Rump said about his fancy boarding school being more military experience than most who served. She didn't reply. Speaking of the military, Dennis says, I got a kick in the head last week, discovered almost 50 years too late that I could have attended West Point. The guy who was my commanding officer in Vietnam came for a visit. He asked if I had considered officer candidate school. I told him that I didn't go because I had no education and figured that I would have been an infantry platoon leader in Vietnam. I said I had a score of 135 on the OCT. And that must have been pretty good, because when I turned 18, they kept calling me in for counseling to try to get me to go. My friend asked me what the cutoff score was. I said I would look it up. I never found out, but I discovered before I got out of the Army, they started a program where if you had a score of 120, they would send you to the Citadel for a year and then to West Point. I never knew about it, and that was before everything was on computers, so I'm sure they had no list of those eligible. I told my spouse, it might have been for the best. If I had gone in, I might have become a Republican. Hope everything's well there. Now everything's just trundling right along, Dennis. Thank you very kindly. And we're glad you're not a Republican. Meanwhile, a note coming in from Mike. Do I smell some Judith Miller in ABC's Terry Moran's question on the Pope's aircraft related to Kim Davis? While Terry Moran did not mention Kim Davis's name, his question clearly was pointed to her. Terry Moran's preliminary comment related to the Pope's visit to the Sisters of the Poor was designed to bring in Pope Francis's comments there and to seemingly expand them to cover not just the religious in what might be seen in a religious setting, but to private and public affairs that operate outside religion in what we used to call the civilized world. Verb tense, used to call. After listening to Terry Moran's question and his repeated attempts to get the Pope to extend his comments to cover Kim Davis, if not by name, by situation, I have the suspicion that Terry Moran, or whoever provided him with that question, knew or at least suspected that Pope Francis had met with, in some fashion, Kim Davis. I mean, here you have Terry Moran of ABC News given an opportunity, mano a mano, to ask a question to Pope Francis. This is not Terry Moran sitting in a room with 100 chairs raising his hand hoping to be called on. This is Terry Moran being brought to the front of an airplane to sit within a foot of Pope Francis and person to person ask any question he might desire to ask. Terry Moran does not ask Pope Francis how he has come to his beliefs on climate change and the dangers that it poses to the civilizations of the world. He does not ask Pope Francis about how all of the world's religions could come together to oppose religious fanatics such as ISIS and make the world safe for all beliefs. Nope. Terry Moran does not ask Pope Francis to tell us what message he believes he delivered to the people of the United States and what, if anything, he's learned from the people of the United States. Nope. All the questions that Terry Moran, wannabe $6 million man of ABC News, asks is one related to Kentucky's county clerk, Kim Davis. God, when you put it that way, it's just pathetic, isn't it? Terry Moran did not go to the issue of same-sex marriage and ask what steps the Catholic Church might take to reverse the U.S. Supreme Court ruling, which allowed for same-sex marriage within the United States and to oppose same-sex marriage worldwide. Terry Moran, without using her name, made Kim Davis the issue. It's as if Terry Moran knows that a story about Pope Francis having met with Kim Davis will be breaking shortly in the future, and that his question is meant to set up the forthcoming story. Now, there is a very important question that the national news media, in fact, no media that I know of, has asked Kim Davis's parents, both of whom are Catholic. That question is, do you accept what your daughter and your son-in-law have told you with regards to their meeting Pope Francis, or do you accept the version being put out by the Vatican, essentially in the name of Pope Francis? In other words, who's lying? Thanks, Mike. I presumed that we would have kind of blown past the whole Pope Francis meets with Kim Davis kind of thing, because apparently the Vatican says it didn't happen, that she was just in a receiving line. Then again, you got to remember that pettifogging lawyer who should probably be disbarred, Matt Staver, earlier they circulated a photo saying, tens of thousands of people in Peru have prayed for Kim Davis, only it didn't, and it was a lie. All right. And I'm not going to get real worked up about the Pope Kim Pope kind of thing. I mean, the guy that the Pope Frank ostensibly follows, you know, Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi, was known to hang out with more than a couple odious human beings, tax collectors, you know, for the Romans, and the temple priests being one of them. Carol tells me that the whole Kim Davis thing was actually leaked to Terry Moran, and that's what led to the Moran question. But he meets with her, he doesn't meet with her, so what? I mean, I'm just not particularly interested in it. As far as I'm concerned, Kim Davis is the closest that the United States presently has to a leper. And so we helped Pope Frank to do that Jesus-y thing. Maybe he was trying to save her from the fires of hell, the heresy. Because remember, the Vatican has said that all of that seven-day creation, evolution, anti-evolution, anti-science stuff in the evangelical fundamentalist movement, they've said that's a heresy. And you know what the Catholic Church does with your heretics? Got a match. Right. Marty tells me, our sun will not actually nova. It's too small of a star. It'll merely expand out past Earth on the way to burning out, on the way toward Mars. Reassuring? I don't know. Oh, dear God, this coming from Steve in New York. But, Bob, it's live on a webcam. Christian networks prepare for return of Jesus with live stream from Mount of Olives. Jack in Shreveport, in regard to the end of times, says, my area's version of USA Today helped things along with a headline about biblical floods in South Carolina. Thanks so much, USA Today. All right. Marty's still a little perplexed. End of the world tomorrow? During which time zone? Is there an asteroid we missed? Is it deep impact all over again? Not that I can see much Morgan Freeman and Barack Obama, but, you know. No. Mount of Olives, Arthur. Mount of Olives, not Olive Garden. Although, you gotta admit, having the returned zombified Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi walk into the Olive Garden's pretty good. Thank you, Arthur. You've given me a vision for the evening. I'll have the endless soup and salad bowl. Don't worry, I'll do it myself. As to who's lying, Steve says, who's lying, Francis or Kim Davis? I'm biased. Yes, one's an uneducated cracker, and one's a person I disagree with, but who's actually at least walking the walk of Jesus. Note the small fiat in lieu of the customary limo. No, I get that. I get that. And you know, hanging out with the odious and despised, and if anybody in this country is odious and despised, it would have to be Sister Clerk Kim Davis. God, who did the pitch perfect Kim Davis on Saturday Night Live last Saturday night when Miley Cyrus was doing the farewell to summer 2015 bit, singing My Way? I think she had a wig on that had hair down to her feet. Yeah, can you just see Yeshua's face at the Olive Garden when they tell him that there's no more free breadsticks? Can you say apocalyptic? Can you say miracle? Well, here, no more free breadsticks? Well, here, let me just break it up. You get a breadstick. You get a breadstick. Break it. You get a breadstick. It's not going to be good for the Olive Garden business model. They'll probably kill him. Wouldn't be the first time. Oh, I got to stop. Irish Dave noting, Bob, death by ice. Many are cold, but few are frozen. I can tell Irish Dave's off on a roll. Not a breadstick, a roll, damn it. Oh, with everything we talked about yesterday evening, last night's program, how did I manage to miss or fail to comment upon or bring into the conversation, as it were, our latest military oopsie? I mean, if the world did end tomorrow, like I said, at least Afghanistan would be getting some relief, because it would mean that the peace is our profession, American military, wouldn't be blowing away any more people laying in hospital beds. I got up. I was still gone. I got up. We were on the road. I read that story and went, what? First thing that crossed my mind was, oh, we must have run out of weddings to bomb. What a monumental markup Afghanistan has been. And, you know, I go back to 2008 when candidate not sure, was saying, we will get out of Iraq.
but Afghanistan is the right war.
Really? Did you ever ask a wedding party? No.
And, of course, we're getting our asses whipped over there because the whole reason for bombing the hospital was because the Taliban had overrun Kunduz. And, you know, there are a lot of dodgy organizations out there. One of the ones for whom I maintain a great deal of respect, I'm sure somebody will send me an article showing me that I shouldn't respect them either. Bunch of cynics. Is Médecins Sans Frontières, otherwise known as Doctors Without Borders. Because as a result of our assault, our longest war in American history, assault on the people of Afghanistan, not a lot there in the way of infrastructure, so Doctors Without Borders put doctors and nurses and volunteers on the ground at a hospital in Kunduz, Afghanistan. And because they are a hyper-competent organization, they made a point of making sure that the well-intentioned but error-prone American military were absolutely, positively, undeniably, no doubt about it, informed that that building there with all the sick, beat up, shot up, cut up people in it was a hospital. Yeah. I mean, the phone calls, letters, postcards, emails. Yeah. Kandahar Air Base, PFC Wintergreen speaking. How may I help? Yeah, this is the Doctors Without Borders. We just wanted to let you know that we got us a hospital up in Kunduz, and we appreciate it a whole lot if you not bomb it. Well, thank you. I'll pass that along to General Dreidel. He'll be looking for a feather in his cap. Okay, that's great. We sure looking forward to not getting bombed by you peace-loving Americans. Goodbye now. I mean, put the big red cross on it. So what did we do? We bombed it. And even after the that hospital we told you about with the red cross on it, you're still bombing it. And we kept bombing. And now apparently, the American military is trying to lay it off on the our Afghan partners in peace, you know, the tribal warlords.
The Afghans are the one that called in the news strike. The airstrike. I mean, we were just doing what we were told.
Yeah, I know.
But, you know, this is the problem with, I mean, this is what you run across when you're dealing with a military that's being used not for defensive but for offensive purposes. Right?
You get some pimply-faced kid who got a high score on the AFSAB, and there's an AC-130 flying around. Yeah, I mean, those are amazing weapons platforms. They really are. They can blast. Oh, Jesus, they can do some damage. So they're just kind of cruising around in the sky waiting for somebody to give them something to do. And the call comes in, and the weapons officer says to the
And, you know, some pimply-faced kid pushes a button, the bomb falls out of the plane, and the next thing you know, 20 or more people are dead in a hospital that he's just bombed. And somebody, you know, is sitting there patting his little hand saying, "Now, son, don't feel bad. You are only following orders." It was those bad, nasty Afghans, our partners in peace, who called in the airstrike, and we were just doing what we were told. I mean, never mind the fact that that hospital was marked as a hospital, and there wasn't any doubt about the fact that it, I mean, you know, if you're gonna make some peace omelets, you're gonna have to break some human eggs, son. It's okay. The buck passing is a little bit embarrassing, I'm afraid. Okay, it's a lot embarrassing. Can we please just leave there? I mean, isn't it about time? And never mind all their rare earth elements and everything that the American corporate superstructure would like to get its grubby little mitts on. Can we just come home from there? Apparently not. No. No, we can't. We're going to stay there to protect profit, I mean freedom. So as you can tell, yeah, we've got ourselves a Dickens of a Titanic Tuesday rolling along. Now here's a fun thing. There's been an analysis released right up my alley, because this is from people who are schooled in the art of word knowing. Over at Grammarly, which is a proofreading app, they've turned out an analysis of the presidential candidates ranked by the grammar that they use. And not necessarily the candidates, but the candidates' followers. Oh, my God, they went to the comments section. What have I said? By analyzing the spelling and grammar of comments on each presidential candidate's Facebook page, the Grammarly analysis found that Republican supporters made mistakes at nearly twice the rate of Democratic supporters. The Grammarly folks went to each candidate's official Facebook page and took comments that were at least 15 words long and expressed either positive or neutral feelings, okay? The negative stuff, they didn't count that. Because, you know, when people get mad on the internet, they just forget the... It just turns into squeaks and grunts and clicks and strange animal noises. Yeah. By the way, you know what we found out here today? Speaking of strange animal noises, we have a bear. Mm-hmm. Agnes, otherwise known as Ellie Mae, is really excited. I told her she can't go and try to make friends with the bear. And she grudgingly agreed. But no, we found a spot in the back of the acre, in amongst the wildflowers and stuff, where what was obviously a bear, as denoted by the fact that apparently we're still not sure if a bear shits in the woods, but he does it in the weeds, or she. Never mind, that forest animal noises. I'm easily diverted.
but I'm taking it as a, and I'm not being a smartass here, I'm taking it as a totemic symbol because I've always been very fond of bears. Must have been all those mornings as a child watching Captain Kangaroo when Dancing Bear would come on. I was always worried about Mr. Green Jeans then. But no, apparently Brother Bear, or Sister Bear, has adopted us and feels... Yeah, because, I mean, there's a bunch of houses around here and some little miscreants flying Confederate flags and things like that. That bear feels comfy enough in our little space to bed down at night. I don't know, it makes you feel kind of good. Yeah. But anyway, so the folks at Grammarly chose comments that were at least 15 words long and either positive or neutral about the candidate. And having gathered all of these, the researchers then randomly pulled 180 comments to analyze per candidate. Grammarly describes the whole experience exercise as a lighthearted look at how well the 2016 presidential candidate supporters write when they're debating online. Well, for every 100 words written, an average Democratic candidate supporter made 4.2 mistakes, while your average Republican candidate backer made 8.7 screw-ups. Democratic supporters tend to have larger vocabularies, duh. Using 300 unique words for every 1,000 words they used, whereas your Republicans... had only 245 unique words for every 1,000. Feed 'em! Wolverines! Yeah. Admittedly, the Grammarly study was skewed a little bit by virtue of the fact that there are so many clowns in the Republican clown arc. Mm-hmm. And a whole lot more supporters. Which means there's a whole lot more Cletuses. They're Cletus poor over on the Republican side. Along the way, they found out that Lincoln Chafee has only 9,526 Facebook followers, whereas Donald Trump has 3.8 million morons. Average number of Facebook followers for Republicans was 1.1 million. Average for Democrats, around 591,000. But there's no getting around the fact that the people who followed or preferred Democratic candidates just happened to be a whole lot better at spelling and grammar. And Lincoln Chafee's followers are the most grammatically savvy followers of any political. But and no surprise, Donald Trump's followers are the dumbest, and that's a level of dumb that competes with the likes of Mike Huckabee and Piyush Jindal, top to bottom. Most grammatically correct presidential candidate supporters: Lincoln Chafee, Jim Webb, Bernie Sanders, Martin O'Malley, dead last among the Democrats, Hillary Clinton. And in fact, Hillary Clinton supporters made the exact same number of mistakes as Carly Farina supporters. Then comes Ben Carson, Lindsey Graham, George Pataki, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, anointed future king of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz, and then way down in 19th place, T-Rump supporters, who make 12.6 mistakes per 100 words, and probably use all caps.
Let's see. Jeb Bush supporters make 7.9 mistakes per 100 words. And Marco the Blonde, they make 8.8 mistakes per 100 words. And now you know the rest of the story. Yeah, that's it. That's it. Thank you, Carol. Carly Fiberina. Oh, I like the sound of that. So that's just some of what we got cooking this evening. Because, I mean, really, we've got some restaurant-quality Titanic stupid out there. Did I say? Yes, I did. I mentioned the name of Piyush Jindal. Oh, yes, I did. We'll get to it. I promise. But it's 5 minutes past the hour. Check in with a couple more pieces of mail coming in. Irish Dave noting that the whole Doctors Without Borders hospital thing gives a whole other meaning to surgical airstrike, doesn't it? Yeah, yes, it does. Ron and Raleigh. Oh, you are a swift one, Ron. Says, so, Agnes wants the right to keep and not arm bears. As far as Slim Leader and the use of drones is concerned, as long as the targets are brown, it's all good. Slim Leader? Keep an arm... Oh, my. Yeah, you're in the zone this evening, Ron. Break time coming. It being Tuesday, we have the Green News Report from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen on the way. And, of course, if you want to get in on the conversation, well, yeah, you know the number. 304-574-8178 or 304-663-HORN, 663-4676. That's the stress line. Either one's fine. If you want to jump in Skype to Skype, that works admirably well also. And that would be Bob Kincaid Horn. If you've never reached out that way, jump right in. Oh, glory. I see that Ron is awake from his nap. That means the world has not ended on October the 7th. I wonder if they thought that out over there at E-Bible or what the hell ever. Probably not. Thinking's not your evangelical fundamentalist strong suit. We are into the second hour of the program, still looking to raise our usual evening's $200. We are at zero. If you'd like to help out, the help is more than welcome, and we do sincerely appreciate it. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
It's Tuesday, October 6, 2015.
We are at a 1,000-year level of rain in parts of the Lowcountry.
Biblical rain and record flooding in South Carolina.
What we're seeing play out is precisely what we warned, you know, would play out decades ago.
Is this now the new normal? India announces it will cut its carbon emissions. Plus, EPA announces new ozone rules to cut air pollution.
So many rules, so little time. All of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
I think it's just awesome that this Pope took on this issue, and there he was, the grandmaster flash of crazy non-evidentiary nonsense, lecturing the Republicans on reality.
Yep. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, 1,000-year drought out here in California, 1,000-year flood out in South Carolina, hundreds dead now, almost 200 dead in landslides thanks to flooding down in Guatemala. Is this all the new normal?
That would be what climate scientist Michael Mann suggests. We'll get to that in just a moment. But first, President Obama has declared a federal emergency for South Carolina after Hurricane Joaquin passing offshore triggered biblical flooding in the state, one of the worst flooding events in U.S. history.
Parts of the coast receiving up to 24 inches of rain in 24 hours.
We have lost everything.
What we continue to go through is unlike anything any of us has ever seen.
Although it didn't make landfall, Joaquin pointed a fire hose of moisture directly at South Carolina, causing catastrophic flooding that has killed at least 9 people. In a press conference on Sunday, South Carolina's Republican Governor Nikki Haley warned of the intensity of the rainfall.
We haven't seen this level of rain in the Lowcountry in 1,000 years. That's how big this is. That's how South Carolina is, what South Carolina is dealing with.
Now, to clarify, what a 1,000-year rain event really means is it's so extreme, there's only a 1 in 1,000 chance of it occurring in any given year. This historic rain event overwhelmed South Carolina's infrastructure, but the true amount of rainfall and flooding may never be known because many of the gauges were washed away. Now remember, Hurricane Joaquin caused this damage without making landfall. At nearly Category 5 strength, it was the strongest hurricane ever recorded this far north in the Atlantic this late in the year.
And it didn't even strike land. That's what's amazing to me about this. This much flooding, and the hurricane was hundreds of miles off the coast.
It was fueled by the warmest sea surface temperatures ever seen. On the broadcast on Monday, climate scientist Michael Mann said the precise influence of global warming on this particular event will take time to calculate, but it was definitely a factor.
You know, we have prima facie evidence that this isn't a 1,000-year event because it's happening now, and events like this are becoming a lot more common. Climate change is very detectably increasing the likelihoods of precisely these sorts of events. What we're seeing play out is precisely what we warned, you know, would play out decades ago.
Yeah, I love when these people, the Republicans in particular, you know, come out, like, who could have expected it? We could have never foreseen it. Well, yes, it was foreseen. It was expected. You people just didn't give a damn enough to pay attention. Either that, or you were more worried about your funders from the fossil fuel industry.
Meanwhile, the Environmental Protection Agency last week issued new rules to cut the amount of dangerous ozone pollution emitted by factories and cars. Ozone is an ingredient in toxic smog, which causes asthma and serious respiratory diseases. Environmental groups criticized the new rules, noting that the EPA set the new standard at the weakest end of the range recommended by its own scientists to protect public health. Finally, in international climate treaty negotiations, India has committed to reduce its carbon emissions, but with a twist. India is trying to lift millions of its citizens out of extreme poverty, so instead of capping its emissions, India will reduce its emissions intensity. That's the amount of greenhouse gas emissions required to produce economic growth. India will cut its emissions intensity up to 35% by 2030 based on 2005 levels, mostly by using lower carbon energy sources.
Cut the emissions intensity?
Yes, if you use natural gas instead of coal, natural gas has half the emissions intensity that coal does to generate the same amount of electricity.
I'll save everyone the montage that I often play whenever we talk about China and the Republicans claiming they would never cut their emissions. But for those who remember that montage, the Republicans are always talking about China and India, how they, both countries, will never cut their emissions. Guess they were wrong again. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Try to realize it's all within yourself. No one else can make you change. And to see you're really only very small. Life goes on.
Oh, gracious sakes. So that's what a thousand-year flood means. That's all clear for me now. This is The Horn. It is 18 minutes past the hour for this Titanic Tuesday, the sixth day of October 2015. I am, of course, Bob Kincaid. And a little reminder, we're trying to raise our evening's $200, and that becomes a big deal because, among other things, and I had forgotten about this, internet bill came due this month, and so I've got to make a payment here in fairly short order to make sure the website stays up. I presume the website is still up. Note coming in, and I'm glad to have it, from Robert in Australia, confirming that, no, the world has not ended. Well, except that it did. Because Robert says, the world ended on September 25th, 2015. Didn't you hear? Or was it the introduction of the New World Order and takeover of the U.S. by the U.N., using Obama's secret European Union army under his direct control? Or did that asteroid crash into the U.S., India, slash somewhere in the world? Or did the lizard people take over the Earth, which is flat, only don't tell anyone because it's a secret and we never landed on the moon? I added the "we never landed on the moon" part. Robert says, YouTube, my favorite place for accurate news. And, hey, we're about to have something happen that has not ever happened before in Horn history. Not only has Australia not been destroyed by a vengeful Bronze Age god, but neither also have, apparently, the UAE. Because that's where Ron is. And this is our first ever call from the sandbox. Ron, are you there?
Most of me is, Bob.
Except the jet lagged part?
Yeah. I woke up, I think I mentioned in the note to you, I just woke up on a few minutes ago on the way on the other side of a king-sized bed and immediately thought, I should share this with the modern world. So I did.
Absolutely. And you know, autumn in the Persian Gulf Desert is I'm told a magnificent thing. Watch the sand as it changes color. I mean, the palm trees don't really drop their fronds, do they?
No, nothing drops their fronds over here. But
well, don't you drop your fronds, because by God, they may cut your head off for it.
No, this is not that kind of place. We've talked about that.
Head loppers.
That's. Well, all I'll say is I came out of the left Ottawa at 10 o'clock on a Saturday evening and arrived over here at approximately 2 o'clock on Monday morning. I missed Sunday. Apparently it was in Heathrow, which is not really a recognized country. And 20-some-odd hours of flight. Left home wearing a light fleece jacket because it was about 45, 48 degrees. And walked through the airport in Abu Dhabi with people looking at me going, what?
What is that thing you are wearing?
Yes. Stepped outside. My glasses fogged up immediately. it was approximately 34 degrees Celsius, which I think is somewhere around 90 thereabouts Fahrenheit in real temperatures. And the humidex was 44, which I equated to 110 degrees.
But it's a dry heat.
No, it was so humid that the driver who took us to the hotel about 30 minutes away got us there in just under 20 minutes. And I saw just over 100 kilometers an hour on the speedometer. I had to use these windshield wipers so we could see the five lanes of absolutely smooth Autobahn-type roads with no traffic on it. And woke up this morning, and it was approximately 90 degrees Fahrenheit with fog. Who would have thought you could have fog when it's 90 degrees?
It's a new one on me.
Yep, me too. So I immediately took a picture of all the water running down the outside of my window in a hotel room at 90 degrees, and it wasn't raining. But the fog seemed to take all the humidity away, so it only got up to 38, which is about 94, 95. So, yes, fall is in its full autumnal luster over here.
Glory, even.
I have had some of the best food, Bob. I thought of you about four times tonight during dinner.
Wow. That must explain the gut rumbling I was experiencing.
I had some coconut prawns, went into a little bar in a hotel that serves what they call pub grub. And, yeah.
Peasant under and, glass?
No. They bring over the menu from the bar. They have a real bar there. And we had some deep-fried prawns in a coconut batter. We had some little tiny sliders made from Wagyu beef.
Ooh.
We had some calamari that was incredible. And we had some thin sliced duck in a that you dipped in a very, very tangy marinara sauce.
Under tooled leather. Yum.
Yes.
Yum.
And that all went with a wonderful pint of Stella. Which, you know, there's very little craft brewing in the UAE.
Only the infidels get to eat the prawns?
Oh, no. They would serve them to anybody because it's
I know, but diet. I mean, that stuff's haram under Islamic dietary laws, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. But this is a Thai hotel called the Dusitani chain. And they'll serve anybody anything. And if your neighbors don't lop off your head, it was okay.
Nice.
Being an infidel, I can do it and get away with it, and I will.
Well, in the chat room, Bike Gata just remarked, mouth-watering coconut prawns with Stella, meow.
Oh, well.
But I'm happy because during my sojourn to the South, Ron, I got to stop at my favorite barbecue joint. And it's not something that a lot of people know about, but it is the second oldest barbecue joint in North Alabama, continuously serving for 68 years, and they've expanded their menu. Used to be it was just hot dogs and barbecued pork. Now it's hot dogs, barbecued pork, ribs, and done in their smoker that they won't let anybody see their smoker. Their pit. Nobody. Unless your family. And they've added chicken.
That's very Islam, isn't it?
No.
They're going to let anybody see your face?
No. No, the pit, not the face.
Oh, okay.
Just serve pop, no beer, no nothing. But, oh my God. loaded up on those magnificent hot dogs. Had a little bit of the just wonderful barbecue,
And I mean, there's two things in the universe of North Alabama barbecue. One, and people who've experienced it know what it is. One is white barbecue sauce. And mm-hmm. that was introduced at Big Bob Gibson's in Decatur, Alabama. And it's magnificent. And then the other is this barbecue joint, which introduced the pool hall slaw to the culinary repertoire of North Alabama.
I've never heard of that.
And ain't nothing like it.
Well, slaw and barbecue go together just like, you know, ham and cheese.
Yeah, but not, I mean, not that mayonnaise-y stuff that they do. No, this is not that. Mayonnaise is not allowed anywhere near this slaw. It's tangy, it's tart, it's mustard-based.
Ah.
And it's spicy as all hell. It'll bring out the little sweat beads on your hairline. It's good stuff, Maynard. And the other thing I brought back, I didn't have enough wherewithal to bring back a bunch of it, but I brought back enough to share with family. The most awesome hickory smoked sausage known to man, or humankind, I should say, so as not to be sexist, comes from a place in South Alabama called, and the brand name is Kaneka. If you happen to live in like the South, you can find it at places like Kroger and, yes, Wally World and Food City. But if you live in a culinary desert where one entire aisle of your grocery store is ramen noodles like I do, can't. So, we're blissed out for a couple of days.
They'd probably have it over in Virginia, wouldn't they?
There are a few Food Cities in Virginia that have it, and a couple of Walmarts. But you can't miss it in Tennessee and Georgia, and I don't know if they got it in South Carolina or not, but Alabama, you know, Mississippi, and it is, to make a pot of gumbo with it, wow, it's better than andouille.
Well, apropos of zip, you're in a food desert, I'm in a real desert. Why don't we talk about juke joints? Have you been to any?
Not lately, but I do. Oh, I've got a question coming in from your lovely sister. She said, ask Ron if he's talked to his wife tonight or just the horn. Ooh. Maybe you don't want to answer that.
The answer is yes.
I think that's the smartest answer you could possibly give. And by the way,
way to go, Kelly. Thank you.
By the way, in terms of competing miserable weather, I've got a note here for you from Robert in Australia. We had four straight days of temperatures between 30 Celsius and 37 Celsius. Today it's 20 Celsius. This sort of event indicates that it could really be a really, really hot summer, as in the 40 Celsius plus range. Remember, global warming is crap. Our XPM said so. Signed, Robert.
Yeah. Well, you haven't lived until you've seen 46 or 47, and you have to wear a coat and tie.
Oh, good God. That's torment. That's torture. There's a UN convention on that, isn't there?
No. No, it's called a good business practice in this part of the world.
Yeah, but I mean, my God, at every enterprise on Earth, you have to have a shirt and tie. But even Enterprise Rent-A-Car made an exception for Hawaii, where Enterprise Rent-A-Car associates get to wear Aloha shirts.
One would think that's as much about marketing as it is about caring for their employees.
Oh, they said that, according to them, they're being culturally sensitive.
Yeah.
And don't you damn well forget it.
Mahala, bastard.
Yeah, some bitch, Mahala. Meanwhile, Ken on the Big Islands just probably snorted something onto the monitor. Spit took it. Mahala, Mahala, you some bitch.
That was a good one, Ron. Yeah, that one scored.
Anyway, I wanted to share a dream with you.
Yes?
Martin Luther King had a dream, and one of mine, I have several, which I may share if I get to know you better, is I have had several, unfortunately, very brief opportunities in the Deep South to visit juke joints.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to go back and do a damn tour.
I got your starting place.
I want to spend about a month doing nothing but juke joints and visiting the grave sites of old dead guitar blues heroes, eating barbecue or whatever mama's cooking in the kitchen, and not getting into fights. It's got to have corrugated tin on the roof or on the sides, a wooden floor with bad linoleum on it, and great food coming out of the back, and a Wurlitzer Rainbow jukebox or something along those lines somewhere over in the corner.
My suggestion for a starting place probably meets several. You can probably tick off several of those boxes.
What place is that, Bob?
The Florabama Lounge.
Ooh, I've heard of that, actually.
Haven't
been there.
And then, of course, you know, dive. Oh, I mean, the Great American Dive Bar is still alive and well. I imagine the floors are still sticky and smell like stale beer at Lee's Tomb in Tuscaloosa. Of course, that's more of a college dive bar. That's a subset, isn't it?
Yes. Oh, definitely. You want the dive bars where there's one guy sitting there who hasn't shaved in about 10 days, but he's not trying to grow a beard. He just hasn't shaved.
Yeah, it's just not
got
worth
two or three teeth left. And just sort of looks at you in bleary eyes, going, do I know you? Nah, really, I don't care. Sit down here, buy me a drink, let's talk. You know, those kind of guys.
Exactly. Now, I admire that. That's a plan. That's a goal. I take it there's not a lot in the way of dive bars in the sandbox.
No. But I just had a memory flash of, and this will trigger my sister Kelly to make another acerbic comment somewhere along the way. But when you think of Vancouver, British Columbia, you don't think of dive bars. But they have them. And there used to be one years ago that was on my bus route home, riding across the bridge from Vancouver to North Vancouver, where I lived at the time. And I could get off. I could be off the bus for as long as an hour, and my transfer still worked. So I could stop, get off, go have a beer in a longshoreman's bar right by the wharf. And you could always meet interesting people there. And one of the guys that I drank with several times was a guy named Chief Dan George.
Oh, wow.
Many times. And Dan never bought a drink, loved ladies. And there were a lot of ladies in this bar who just happened to be there. And a couple of times we actually left the bar at the same time, and I made sure he got on the right bus to get back to where he was going. And we would ride home, and I'd sit beside him on the bus for 10 or 15 minutes because Dan could not drive. I don't think Dan ever learned how to drive, but at the very least, Dan couldn't drive. What a wonderful conversationalist. So you can meet really interesting people in dive bars. You should not dismiss them out of hand.
Oh, no, no. No, no, no. They're fascinating people. A lot more interesting than you meet in, say, you know, church. Of course, there are some who would say that dive bars are a form of church.
Or Starbucks. Have you ever met an interesting person at a Starbucks?
Never. Not once. I've met several frustrated people. But I think that goes with the territory. And by the way, I must add, should you find yourself in Vancouver, British Columbia, I imagine that Brother Deacon Asa would be right put out if you didn't go in search of said dive bar with him.
Yeah. Wonder if Brother Deacon Asa is aware that, A, Dan George is dead, and B, that was only one of my haunts. I could introduce him to several of my haunts, and we could go find out if they're still there.
Now, see, this is what I mean when I say that we have built more than a radio network here, that this is a community. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, but, again, this is an old software term, Bob. Multiple nested digressions.
Yes.
Let's work our way back up to I Have a Dream.
Okay.
I would love to spend a month, maybe 6 weeks, doing nothing but going from juke joint to juke joint to juke joint, eating barbecue and whatever mama cooks. And listening to the roots music, the guys playing guitars that have only got five strings on them, and some guy sitting over in the corner who's not part of the band, wailing on a harmonica along with the band, and those sorts of things. That would be just a wonderful way to spend a month or so, wouldn't it?
Even as much as 6 weeks. But are you going to? Is it geographically limited? Is this a driving tour?
Oh, it's got to be a driving tour, and preferably in something that's not rented. And you need to be slightly concerned as to whether it's going to make it to the next juke joint.
You've thought this out. This really is a dream, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, I've thought about this a lot. And there's two or three people that I've met along the way that are simpatico that would just be wonderful to take.
Oh, I'm signed on. I'm on.
Yeah. But it'd be a certain kind of person that would enjoy that for more than one unique night in a row, you know? Isn't this sweet? Isn't this cute? Aren't these people special? And then, you want to do that again? So,
I can highly recommend the Tune in Washington, D.C.
Yeah?
Yeah. One of the older dives up on Capitol Hill, and I mean full of characters. And see, that's the problem with the dive bar. I mean, if we can digress for a moment, Ron. Because the Food Network is the curse of all things good in this life, because as quickly as they find something and do a segment on it. The sign goes up in the window, as featured in Dive Bars of America on Food Network.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of one of those Schrodinger's cat, Heisenberg's uncertainty principle kind of things, where, you know, a dive bar is only a dive bar as long as it doesn't know it's a dive bar.
Well, they may know they're a dive bar, but as long as nobody else does. If they can figure out a way to make money on it, yeah, they'll sell their souls, most of them, not all, but they'd sell their souls in a heartbeat.
By the way, from the Small World Department, Brother Deacon Asa has just informed me, I know Chief Dan George's son, Lawrence Leonard George. What a small world.
It is, correct.
Well, I mean, it's Canada, too. I mean, there's only like 15 of you people, right?
Yeah, did you meet my cousin in Winnipeg? Yeah. You won't believe how many questions I've had from Americans over the last 40 years. Oh, you're from Canada. I have a cousin up there. You might know him. He's in Winnipeg.
The only one!
Winnipeg is approximately 1,000 miles away from where I live.
Sure. Well, and the phenomenon is recognizable down here as well, or over here, or back here, Ron. And you know back. This. You know here. You know this is a West Virginian. I grew up with. We'd say things like, "Well, we're going back to West Virginia," and our neighbor and somebody would say, "Are you going to Virginia? Are you? I've got an aunt in Roanoke." And yeah. Apparently it is a phenomenon that well known enough that Rick Steelhammer, who writes, I think, still for the Gazette or maybe wrote, once had a license plate motto contest for the state of West Virginia. One was Wild, Wonderful West Virginia, and then underneath the plate, on the bottom side, of it said, "Y'all come back now and clean up your mess." But the other was Wild, Wonderful West Virginia, "You've got an aunt in Roanoke."
Oh, I like that. He would have probably enjoyed a trip to juke bars.
I absolutely think he probably would have. And, you know, it's not like, hey, great dive bar on Charleston's East End. And fairly well respected on Elizabeth Street, the Empty Glass. A lot of good musicians have played in the Empty Glass. And it's about as seedy as they come.
Yeah, you're talking about them big city dive bars, though. And
you're talking about the do drop in out there on the corner of Iron City Road and Jackson Highway.
Yeah, and with a decent hour drive and no cops, you can get to Charleston in an hour. Yeah. My most enjoyable ones are places that had you show up, 5 o'clock on a Saturday evening, and you didn't expect to be there in the first place, and you show up and they're fixing your car across the road, and you won't be able to get it fixed until the next day, and you're having a beer and let's try a little bit of food from the kitchen, and the food's good, and then a bunch of guys show up and. Some of them are musicians that you've never heard of and never will. And the other ones are people who know those musicians, and they decide to have some beer and some food, whatever mom is cooking. And the next thing you know, it's 2 a.m. in the morning. You've had an awful lot of beer and some really good food and some good music. And then everybody sort of goes back to their life, and you're still stuck there getting back to your no-tell motel. Waiting for your car to get fixed the next morning. Those are the kinds of places I would love to search out and find.
Well, they're there, but it sounds a little like Brigadoon, though. You can't get there unless you're supposed to be there.
Maybe, but isn't that what dreams are all about, Bob?
Absolutely, and apparently being there and there where you are, surrounded by. The autumnal luster, was it luster you said, of autumn coming to the desert.
Yeah.
It's got you downright wistful. I can almost hear you pining.
that's me. I mean, Kelly will tell you how sentimental I am, but I know what I likes, and those are the things that stick in my mind. So. And I'm happy to share. I'm a modern man.
You're a giver. You're a giver, and you're not afraid to cry.
Yeah. Okay. I'm a giver.
Yeah. Right. Okay. I probably overextended. Yeah. Right.
Speaking of, things autumnal. Had any good cigars lately?
I was going to tell you earlier. I brought the sticks home. And I put them in the humidor, and I got the distilled water out and filled up my little humidifying device. And I have been patiently, and I do mean patiently, letting them rest. And I figure, next day or so. Cause
they came out of a walk-in humidor.
Yes.
And I don't, being sealed, I wouldn't have thought they would have changed all that much. But I'm not a connoisseur of cigars.
Well, I'm,
I've always found it to be good practice just to lay them down and let them rest in the environment where they're going to be incinerated. And then, you know, it has taken me damn near 52 years to develop this degree of Zen patience. I'm kind of proud of it.
Well, use it if you got it, son. Flaunt it. Yeah.
And so I've got a certain bottle of rum sitting by. I've got a favorite little juice glass for said bottle of rum. And I'd say, yeah, my patience will wear out before the week's done.
Well, I remember.
But the thing is, I open the humidor and I just have a look. And I said, you or you or you? Maybe you. Trying to figure out which goes first.
Well, all I can say is that I broke out some of the Pertaga shorts on a golf course last time I was down there. And despite the rain, they still lit up well. And the basic response from the other two guys who lit them up was, whoa.
Yeah, wow. Well, whoa. Yeah, a Pertaga short is, I mean, you wouldn't expect it, but it's a little, you know, mini Corona. And yep. it's not a long term, you know, commit 3 hours of your life to it smoke. But wow. No. It packs a punch and it's an absolute little flavor dynamo.
I can get them in Canada. Maybe someday you can get them in the U.S.
Devoutly to be wished, Brother Ron. Devoutly to be wished.
Okay. Send your contributions to, you know, Brother Bob. Let's let him survive long enough to buy Pertagas in the U.S.
Hear, hear. Of course, then again, quality will probably go right through the floor because that's going to be a whole lot of cigars to roll.
Or the price. The number of cigars will stay the same. The price will go through the roof.
And I was actually outside the hotel we were in for the conference down in Atlanta, and had a fascinating conversation with a fellow there who turned out to be a pretty progressive guy, and he was sitting out in the smoking area honking away on a big old, I mean big, Monte Cristo, a Cuban. And you could tell from 30 feet away just the quality of the smoke. That wasn't,
it was a Cuban, yeah.
Yeah, that was no Dominican. That was no Honduran.
Did you ask him where he got it?
Oh, yeah. he says, you know, some I order in. He said, but in the United States now, if you ask just right, and they trust you, they'll sell you one. Because they're all over the place, he said.
Huh.
Of course, I didn't say the other side of that is that there's all kinds of counterfeits.
Yeah, but as soon as you light one up, you know it.
Oh yeah, you do. And this one was pretty obviously real.
Yeah.
We had a wonderful conversation.
Do you find it ironic that you can buy BC Bud, Hawaiian weed, stuff from Mexico, and find it all easier than you could find a decent Cuban cigar?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. But, you know, then it's a matter of finding something the same time 2 weeks in a row. That's the trouble with black markets.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I hadn't had a cigar for almost a year, and I got to say the Pertaga was just... I stood on the tee, and I didn't really care if I made my shot when it was my turn. I'm just staring at the cigar, going, "Damn, this is good."
And you know, you can get a box of 50 of those for about $225.
Yep.
Overseas. Yeah.
Not from the guy with the walk-in humidor, by the way, in Canada.
No, because you got hit with that, and I appreciate it. You got hit with that whopping Canadian tax.
Oh yeah, yeah. So how's Ferg doing?
He's doing good. He's doing good. We had a great road trip.
Yeah.
You got to meet the lad.
I did. Yeah.
Good.
After his mother. That's good. Yeah.
Yeah. Got that's where the looks came from.
Well, Bob, I can feel the rack calling me here. So,
well, it is 3:52 there.
3:52 a.m.
Yeah, you probably ought to get a little shut eye and hope the jet lag passes. How much longer are you there?
I get to stay here until really late Thursday night, early Friday morning, and then I fly home, and I get home on Friday after 23 hours of transit.
Yeah, stumbling through airports. So what, back to Heathrow and then across from Heathrow to...
Yeah. And on the next flight, though, we're going to do it direct from Toronto to Abu Dhabi. And
Be chomping some nicotine gum on that one.
Now, the flight is 14 hours. Who would have thought they could make an airplane that could stay up for 14 hours? But they do. And
is that going to be that big old A380?
No, the A380 doesn't have that much range, actually.
Really?
But that's a fine airplane.
But the 7-4 does, right?
No. 767 does, and I think the 787 will. But there are some out there with extended range planes that can go for damn near 16 hours and still have reserve. But Airbus doesn't make them yet, at least to my knowledge. But that 380, oh, wow, the thing should have its own damn postal codes.
I was going to say, yeah.
Big. This is an enormous friggin' airplane. Hatches in the floor, circular hatches that you would expect to see in something like an old Zeppelin, where you twist it and raise it up, and we go down to the lower decks to meet the snipes that are slaving away, making the wheels turn to keep the propellers going, etc. These things are just absolutely huge, with passageways for the crew from the first to the second floor and down into the cargo holds where they store the camembert and the caviar and things like that. It ain't like a DC-3, I can tell you.
Or a C-47.
Yeah. Yeah. So, in any event, I'm going to sign off. I've got a big day tomorrow and a big day thereafter, but I just wanted to test a connection from... back to the infidels from over here in Nirvana. So,
well, all's well amongst us infidels. You take care, Ron.
Will do, you.
All right, later.
Good night, sir.
From the desert, that is our buddy Ron, formerly of the Frozen North, until he's back to the Frozen North. And dare I think maybe we got Tracy?
Oh, yeah.
Hey, Tracy.
Hey, honey, how are you?
Muddling right along. How about you?
I'm trying to survive a 4-year drought and wondering when the fuck fall is going to start, but I guess I shouldn't complain because at least I'm not like Ron in the goddamn desert.
You didn't have coconut prawns and Wagyu beef sliders either.
Exactly. But that's okay because I'll be in New Orleans in a couple of months of it.
Yeah.
And it's so funny you guys were talking about juke joints, and you forget more than you realize you've forgotten until somebody says something and you're like, oh my god, I've been to a juke joint, and I totally forgot about this because the way Ron described the juke joints that he wants to go to, it was just that kind of place. It was I was in Dallas, Texas, and this was, oh my god, 15 years ago, and there was a smoker out back with the barbecue and the fish fryer. They would fry
hotter than fish grease, you betcha.
Yeah, hotter than fish grease, absolutely, with the jukebox in the back and somebody picking on the guitar, and I'm like, oh my god, you know, I had totally forgotten that I had been to a joint because it just didn't, I guess, one thing, blues is just not my, that's not the kind of music I really listen to, but it was, so I would be like that kind of person that Ron was talking about, how, oh, isn't that cute? Anyway, we got to go back.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, there's juke joints and juke joints, and they develop differently. I remember a couple of years ago when Dr. Allen kindly had me down to down Texas way for my first trip to Texas, and I spoke to the Waco Friends of Peace there. It still stands out in my memory. One evening, because Dr. Allen knew my love for good barbecue, he had done some research. He and his lovely partner, and found some underappreciated barbecue, and we drove south from Waco to a little place in Bell County, Texas, that had started out as just this guy was good at cutting up deer and making deer roasts and deer sausage and deer bologna and deer pepperoni and stuff like that, and he got so good at it that people said, well, why don't you do barbecue? And he said, why don't I? And so,
Why the hell not?
And so he got the whole family together. And yeah, it was corrugated metal sided, nothing fancy, rough cut lumber on the inside. Mama made all the pies. They made their own sausage and ribs and pulled pork and, yeah, smoked brisket to die for and their own sauce. And whoo wee. Yeah, special. Yeah.
We went to another place outside of Austin, Texas, or Abilene, I don't know, Texas. I tried not to. You know, it's one of those things that when I did go to Texas, it was at a time before I even realized that, oh, my God, I shouldn't be in Texas. But, you
now,
know.
Now.
Me being who I am, it was like, if I'm just glad that the me that I am now never went to, I was not knowing that I was in Texas. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I wouldn't have survived in Texas. Like, there would have been a lynching. But, we went to this place outside of Austin, and we had like one of those places that if you don't know where you're going, you'll never find it. And it doesn't matter. You know, you turn left, it's a creek, and then go up, you know, kind of like that. And the folk in this place, they make this homemade sausage.
Mm-hmm.
It brought tears to my eyes.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm from California, and, you know, we have wonderful food here, wonderful barbecue, usually, but, you know, and it's usually the barbecue that I've gotten, you know, is by way of family members, you know, via Texas, Mississippi, you know, Louisiana, not so much the Carolina folks, because I'm not so much in the vinegar, but that's just me.
Oh, I love me some vinegar barbecue now.
Hey, again, that's not part of the country that I, you know, not so much us. But it's just interesting until, you know, and it's good until you go someplace, like you actually go to Texas. There's Texas-style barbecue because you're in California and people are saying that it's Texas-style. And if you've never been to Texas, okay, that must be good. And then you go to Texas and have actual Texas-style barbecue in Texas. And you're like, oh, I've been lied to. I mean,
yeah.
Granted, the food is so
good. I've been had.
I've been hooked wings. I've been bamboozled.
Well, that's like the little barbecue joint that I was able to stop by on my recent southern sojourn. It just sits there. There's no blinking lights. There's no fancy anything. It's just the same family's been doing it the guy who's running it now is the great grandson of the guy who started it. And they burnt down a few years ago, got a fire started in the pit and did some damage, but they rebuilt because place wouldn't be the same without it. And they just used the opportunity to expand their eating area a little bit, but it's still not a big old restaurant. You can sit down and eat your food and get you a cold can of Grape Co. if you want. But nothing, I mean, seriously, nothing fancy. Except the food is the most mouth-watering, exquisite manifestation of the idea of pork barbecue that has ever been had on the face of planet Earth. But I'll bet you there's nowhere in L.A. that's got a sign up that says Alabama style barbecue.
No. No. Mm-mm. They're lucky to get Texas style barbecue out here. Now you won't.
And I started a lengthy discussion on Facebook about because I posted a picture of that hot dog,
Oh my God! Check it out. I have to check.
And everybody was going, "Oh, Chicago dog," and then the L.A. contingent chimed in and went, "Pinks."
Now let me tell you a little something. I am loathe to stand in line for food for anybody. I could give a damn. So a few years back, I decided, okay, I'm going to try Pink's. It just so happens that I was driving by Pink's, and there was that one time that it wasn't a line around the corner. So I stopped at said Pink's. I'm like, oh my, such a, what is the word that I'm looking for? When you talk about something, it doesn't live up to it. It's overrated. And it's like...
Yeah, that's what we chant when we watch Notre Dame games. Overrated.
Overrated. Oh, yeah. And it's like, and you sit there, and I'm like, if it was one of those moments that if I had a student line for this hot dog, again, how to do fish grease. Because I'm like, I don't get it. There's certain places where... Like, one of my used-to-favorite delis in L.A. was Cantor's Deli. They have a potato, they used to have a potato conditioner would bring a tear to your eye. I would go there and have my chicken noodle soup with extra noodles, my half of corned beef, pastrami sandwich, and a knish with sour cream. Not so much the gravy, definitely the sour cream. So one day, I'm like, I'm going to buy Cantor's because Cantor's is a ways from my house. And, when I wind up, there's certain parts of town that when I wind up on those parts of town, even if I'm not hungry, I go buy food to bring it back home because I don't know when I'm going to be back there. So I call Cantor's to place my order. Now, I gave them plenty of time that I should have been able to park my car running, pay for my food, and be out. They hadn't even started my food. Okay, I drive a cab a lot of times, I gotta be, I only have a certain amount of time to, kind of break and not lose my space and turn my time. So the food wasn't ready. I finally get my food. I've lost my spot in the queue and I'm like, but that's okay. I have cancer. It's all to the good. Bob?
Nah.
Bob, I, let's just say, that food that I bought, the soup, the sandwich, and the knish, we're talking over $20, okay? And that's a lot of money for, a sandwich and some soup and a potato dumpling, basically. When it's good, it doesn't matter, but when it's not, the bread was hard, the pastrami was just dry and limp. The chicken noodle soup was as bland as I am black. And the potato knish, if I had thrown it at somebody, I could have knocked them out. And it's one of those things that when you go somewhere that you've been going to for years, and it's consistently good or even beyond good, but just amazing, and then it's not. It's not even a slow... what is it, when you go slowly downhill or whatever, there's a word, but my vocabulary is not working right now. And it's just, it wasn't like it just kind of, went from, it's really good to okay to, oh my God, I'm never going back there again. It went from, it was wonderful to, I'm never going back there again. And it's like, this is years before, a while before Jan and I got together, and we happened to be going down Fairfax, to go, and she's like, let's go to Cantor's. Sorry.
They're after you.
And I said, no. And she's like, and she goes, well, why? And I told her, she's like, well, maybe it was an off day. I said, see, I handle off days okay. I said, but see, my wife is very persnickety. And if we go somewhere and the food sucks, then I have to hear it, and I don't want to hear it. I said, baby, you know what? Let's play it safe.
And they said gay marriage couldn't match up with a heterosexual marriage.
Bullshit.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
You know what? I can't. You know what I'm looking forward to? I mean, I'm not looking forward to. But I was listening to something, some radio station, right after the Supreme Court said gay marriage is a law of the land. This radio station is like, why are you guys so upset about gay marriage passing? Just think about gay divorce court.
Yeah, no, that's and you know what? The lawyers of America have been, yeah, really, we need some gay marriage because that means there's going to be some gay divorce.
The gay divorce court on television.
Oh.
The divorce court. That's what I mean. Just think about gay divorce court on TV. Do you know?
Well, see, that's like my ongoing thing, Tracy, that we will know that full equality has been achieved in America when there's a Cialis commercial with two guys sitting in a sitting in separate bathtubs watching a goddamn sunset holding hands.
And that's, ooh. I think that even it's so funny. The things that you don't think about until somebody says it, and you're like, "Holy shit!" Well, you know, we got the cereal commercials. You know, we got the graham cracker commercials, and the Sony Pop commercials. So, what's not? I mean, if there was ever a
market, I mean, you know, hey, you know, Mike Huckabee is all pissed off about the gay Doritos, right?
The rainbow Doritos.
Yeah, I got it right here.
You're laughing, and you're like, okay, I gotta get through this. So go ahead, try not to laugh too hard while you're in between. You know.
When it became clear that Frito-Lay would not back down, Huckabee and Lane called on Christians to boycott all snacks made by the company, in order to protest the perceived connection to Savage, whom they call an anti-Christian bully. Okay.
Who's Savage?
I'm trying to figure that out here. Dan Savage, you know, the It Gets Better project. In a letter to over 100,000 pastors, Lane wrote that intolerance for Frito-Lay's brazen corporate support of hate speech by Dan Savage, that were it directed toward Muslims would warrant a Justice Department investigation and prosecution, is chipping away at the very character and soul of the American experience. No.
Stop. Slow your roll, homie.
By the way, when the siren sounded a couple of minutes ago, Carol sent you a note. Tracy, your ride's here.
Not yet. I've been good, and it was fire trucks. It wasn't police trucks, police cars, so we're good. It wasn't a paddy wagon. Wait, slow your roll. What the? Hate speech?
Tracy, these are evangelical fundamentalists. They've run campaigns against Tinky fucking Winky. They've run campaigns against Sponge Goddamn Bob. I mean, they, of course they're mad at a corn chip.
And I like Doritos.
Homosexuals used to have a libertarian position. Let me do what we do in the privacy of my own home. They've moved into a totalitarian position. You're going to participate in our weddings, or we're going to bankrupt you. The next step is fascism. You're going to cheer at our weddings, or we're going to put you in jail.
Okay, see, here's the deal.
I watched your wedding I watched your wedding on the interweb tubes. I saw your compulsory. Your compulsory straight cheering section, all doer faced up in the balcony, being forced to cheer for Jan and Tracy as they got married and destroyed Merca and encouraged volcanoes and earthquakes and floods and tornadoes and stuff. I seen it.
And drought. You know why we are in the middle of a 4-year drought in California? If I hadn't gotten married, the drought would have been over last year. You do realize that, right?
Yes, you're personally responsible.
And you know, I wish, Bob, I had that much power that I could, you know, have. And see, this is what tickles me about these idiots, these, what, remember, because I can't really, I always, I get tongue-tied or twisted when I try to say evangelical, and it came out, the first time I said it was evil genitals.
Yes, I do remember that. I think that's in the archives.
Uh-oh. So, and I said that's why the genitals are evil, because they're trying to keep other people from having sex and, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, genitals need to be used. But anywho, I wish I had the kind of power, or most homosexuals, or whatever we are called this week.
Human beings.
Human beings, exactly. I'm a human being before I met Jen and fell over Jen, and I will be a human being until the day, you know, I am laid to rest. But I lie at rest. But I just don't understand, because if we human beings that decide that we're going to sleep with the same sex, if we had as much power as we as people claim, and a lot of us are, I can't do the numbers because I don't know the numbers, but I have a sneaking suspicion that a large percentage of people of the LGBTQ community are of the liberal vein. Don't you think? If we
but you'd be surprised. There are some right wingers too, and I mean.
Oh no, I know some of them.
I don't even know. You know how right wingers, when they talk about the gay community, the first thing they talk about is the sex. I don't. I think about gay right wingers, and I just, how does that work? How do they do that?
How does that work? I know. I can't sit down. Our family breed. Why do I know a black lesbian conservative Republican?
I'd go play the lottery. Those kind of odds, I'd go play the lottery if I were you, Tracy.
How in the fuck? Let's forget about the homosexuality, the lesbian thing. Let's just take that out of the equation. That, so we'll call lesbian, you know, whatever. So let's just take that out of the equation, that variable out of the equation, variable A. All right, so we still have, you're black and you're a woman. Okay, you're a woman. Take that out of the equation. But this is leave black. Just let's just leave black in that equation. They hate us. They think that we are less than nothing. We're the ones, you know, when you talk about Black Lives Matter and people say, no, but all lives matter. Yes, they do, unless you're black, and, you know, because we have to remind the government and other people around us that we are Americans, we are human, and we do matter. So when I hear, I was listening to, Jan watches the Sunday morning news shows, and sometimes I do too. And there was a sister on there, and I don't know her name, but she was obviously a black woman Republican. And I don't understand. Well, actually, I do to a certain extent, but it hurts my heart. It hurts my soul that there are people that look like me, and they are voting for people who, if they could, put us all back into slavery. If they can legally get away with it, well, no, they have. It's called debtor's prisons. It's called when, you know, you can't pay your bill, you know, because they're bringing debtor's prisons back in certain parts of the country. Yet another reason why I'll never leave California. You know, they put.
Yeah, not a bad reason.
Not a bad reason.
Let me back up for just a minute, Tracy, and just point out one thing. In case you were wondering about whether or not Pastor Governor Brother Reverend Presidential Candidate Diabetes Snake Oil Salesman Mike Huckstraby was a hypocrite, and I know you were wondering.
Yeah, you know, I sometimes wonder. So enlighten me, Bob. Please do.
So he wants to boycott Doritos because they're supporting hate and bullying Christians. You want to know what he called it when folks boycotted Hate Filet back over there, intolerant stance.
Oh, yeah.
Economic terrorism! But it's not economic terrorism if you're doing it in the name of Jeebus.
Jeebus. See, this is those things that it's like the whole thing with Miss Kim Davis. Is she still around? Is she?
I'm waiting for her 15 minutes to be up, but.
And the whole thing. See, the Pope supported her. Okay, now, I grew up.
Well, no, it turns out he didn't. Now, hold on.
No, I know that. I know that. No. No, that's what I'm saying. That's my point. And the point is, we both know how evil genitals feel about Catholics. Why? That's why I knew there was an issue, because, see, Mike Huckabee and all these other ones didn't have pictures and all this, because it wasn't true. And the fact that they can't, they basically think Catholics or the Pope is the Antichrist, because, you know, they pray to idols or whatever. You know, you can't be praying to their idols, and they don't.
Mary worshippers is what they are. Mary worshippers.
Thank you. I was wondering. I knew there was something. And I'm like, oh, okay. But it just goes to prove or show just the craziness and the hypocrisy. It's like when Mittens was running for president, and you had a full page ad by Billy Graham touting about how, you know, we should be voting for Mitt, well, not we, but, you know, you Republicans, because, you know, he's, and I'm like, they have about as much disdain. I don't know who they can't stand the most, the Mormons or the Catholics.
It's
anybody?
Well,
Bueller? Is it a tie?
Bueller, right? Yeah.
Bueller. So, to hear and see, you know, all these Republicans who would cross the street before they even talked or even came close to a Mormon or a Catholic, tell all this, and there's hypocrisy. But I would rather, but they're like, they would rather have a Mormon run and win than to vote for the brother. The Kenyan Muslim socialist atheist, what else is he?
Well, the Kenyan Muslim socialist fascist.
Atheist. Fascist, yeah. Atheist. And, yeah. So, but they remember, we live in a post-racial America, Bob.
Yeah.
Did you get the memo?
I missed that.
Did you get the memo that we live in a post-racial America?
And is being post-racial, is that why they can use that word to describe him? So, or as Politico did a couple of days ago, call him more or less call him uppity some more.
Oh, I missed that. They're back to the uppity.
As Charlie Pierce noted. Politico had to work for it, but they found a new way to call Barack Obama uppity.
Oh, please do share.
I don't have it right in front of me, but if you go to Esquire Politics blog, it's there.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's right up there with, you know, the evolution of the word nigger to thug.
Oh, yeah. Let's see. Black guy kills somebody, thug. Muslim kills somebody, terrorist. White guy mows down 13 people, mentally disturbed.
Mentally disturbed
This all goes back to Katrina 10 years ago. White folks foraging for food. Black folks looting.
Looting.
Absolutely.
It was back to the, you know, what happened just a couple of days ago up in Oregon, and our buddy Jeb Bush. It will stuff happen, and
he gets such a pass for that because we just kind of expect that from. I guess we just expect that from Bushes. They say stupid, mean spirited shit. So it's okay.
Well, see, here's the thing, and it set my mind going, and my English teacher told me that I need to keep a journal, or I get the phone or something. So when these thoughts come and I either write them down or I speak them so I could then write them down later, because I come up with some good shit sometimes when I'm pissed. No, I'm not going there. It's too far away.
Screw you, buddy.
Yeah, I'm not driving this time of day over to that far in Vermont. But when he said stuff happens, what it instantly made me think of is, yes, stuff happens. But see, that kind of stuff will never happen to you, Jeb. You know why? Because see, your kids will always have protection. There will be Secret Service. There will be some kind of security around your entire family. Okay? Your children will never, ever, ever have to worry about if they go to school and that they will ever have to worry about being killed because of who you are. You people will never experience anything like that. You will never have to worry if, you know, you kissed your kids goodbye and to wonder if they will ever come home again. It's not even, you know, aside from what, you know, what's happening with the crazy mass, the 45th mass shooting we've had this year in this 45 in this country. Let's just go to the mothers of brown kids here in this country. And I'm saying the brown, Hispanic and black. Nobody has to, I don't know what it's, I know what it's like every day when my son would go home, would leave for work. I'm not to come home. Hey, I'm worried every night.
Right, and you know what? Carol just told me that there's a YouTube video now of right-wingers calling for the assassination of the president for having the nerve to go and visit Roseburg, Oregon.
And why? What?
Yeah. Hey,
why?
Tracy,
why?
Tracy, Trey, I know. I gotta cut this a little bit short because I've got somebody calling in who has lived through the flooding in Columbia, South Carolina, and I want to get a report on the ground there. So let's do talk real soon, okay?
Not a problem.
All right, you take care.
You too.
Bye.
Talk soon. Bye.
And that was Tracy, the lady cab driver. I hate to cut the call short, but you know, our dear friend Eric Bjorn. Who engages with me from time to time on prayer meeting Wednesday. Well, nobody's in character for this. This is serious and very much in earnest. I reached out to Eric earlier today, and just because I knew he was down, I know he's down in Columbia, South Carolina, and I just wanted to reach out to him to see if he could tell us a little bit about what's going on there. And he graciously, in the midst of the chaos that is Columbia right now, agreed to give us a ring, and there he is. Eric, good evening, and thank you.
Good evening, Bob. How are you?
I think that question is probably superfluous and much better to be directed toward you, sir.
Well, thankfully,
I mean, I'm on high ground.
Right. Well, I seem to have chosen my domicile well. I am also one of the few high points of the city right now, but and definitely impacted by the elephant nose spray that Joaquin brought to Palmetto State. It's been devastating on so many levels to so many lives. One hardly even knows where to begin. But I consider myself grateful this evening that I'm dry without drinking water. I mean, I have drinking water. We don't have drinkable. We don't have potable tap water. At present, as do not many, many people in Columbia.
West Virginia knows a little bit about that, so we sympathize.
Yeah, unfortunately, right? It's an experience I wish none others had or were aware of. For those who don't know, Columbia is the capital city of South Carolina, Charleston. Though it was hit with gigantic floodwaters, Columbia was devastated by a once in a millennium storm. Well, that's not something you hear very often. I guess the last time a storm like this hit the Palmetto State, hit South Carolina, the Roman Catholic Church was splintering in 1051. It's been a while. I think it was something in the range of 20 to 21 inches of rain within a day or two. nobody's ever seen anything like this. And I just don't even know where to start. It's like being run over by a crash of rhinos.
Well, you know,
look up and there's sunshine. This, well, we'll say this. This morning, the WIS meteorologist, that's the local NBC affiliate, showed a picture of the sun rising over downtown and broke down on air. He lost it completely. And just started crying because we were so collectively a joy to see sunshine. And I ran straight to Facebook and posted, "Here comes the sun." Never did the voice of George Harrison sound better. If it ever sounded good at all, right? But
I'm fond of it, but I hate to admit it, but in a way, I immediately thought, as I saw what was happening there, Eric, I thought of Katrina. Because, you know, Katrina on the one hand was the hurricane, but it wasn't the hurricane itself that brought on the damage, but the failure,
right,
of the infrastructure itself.
I don't think I've ever heard of a city so far inland so overtaken by a hurricane. There are something in the order of hundreds of roads closed in South Carolina right now and severe damage throughout the state. But most recognize that Columbia took the brunt of it, which is dead center. It's just spectacular the amount of rain that fell. And I believe I'm correct.
What surprised me was the report of the failure of a bunch of dams.
Here's the interesting thing, Bob. To my knowledge, all lakes in South Carolina are man-made.
Yes.
Or all lakes of consequence. So anywhere you see a lake in the state, there's a dam connected to it. And I'm just going to bypass all of the jokes tonight. There's so many of them. If you needed to engage in the dark humor, but I think I'll just engage in straight out fact tonight. But there are dams everywhere. In Colombia, there are a series of small finger lakes whose dams have never had to endure, never were designed to endure rainfall in such a short period of time. Several have broken, have breached. You may have seen in national news in good parts of the city underwater. I live about seven blocks from the one that was constantly iterated over national news. I just happen to live at the top of the hill, thankfully. But we're still not, we might be dry from the celestial heaven skies at this point, but all of that water is still gathering from the upstate and from other places and hitting sources in Colombia. And, you know, I think we're still waiting to see if the worst is yet to come in the next day or so. But many, many homes have been ruined. It's a surreal experience. I've spent considerable time in Haiti, and I'll just walk you through the chronology. I run a large arts festival here in town called the Rosewood Arts Festival, and we knew when we saw the predictions of rain, we knew we had to make an early call. But you see, when you see a meteorologist predicting 12 inches of rain, you just kind of go, yeah, whatever. But we realized, you know, even a little rain probably would have washed out our festival and our rain day being the next day, so Saturday and Sunday. So we made an effort to cancel and reschedule for later in October, and I was just completely busy with that this week. And then all of a sudden, Mother Nature just stomped down upon us. But an instinct went off on me when I went to the sink in the middle of the storm, and it went dry. I mean, I just immediately, having spent so much time in Haiti and other places of the world, I ran down to the store, grabbed as many cases of water as I could, because I realized what was about to happen. And I was in a community with about 190 families, and so I then ran around and said, collect, you know, yes, it's raining, and yes, it's no fun, but collect it while it's there, folks. So everybody in our community really began an effort to collect as much non-potable rainwater as possible, because, you know, the toilets get to the solid waste builds up fast.
Well, that it does, and these are realities that folks
often do not consider when everything works.
Right, and civilization crumbles. And, you know, it's funny, we have a number of people in my community that are medical and PhD students at the university who are from the Middle East and other parts of the world. And they were afraid. It's not as if they haven't come from conditions like that, but, you know, when you're in a new country, you don't necessarily know how you handle emergencies in a new culture. And, I was telling people, listen, folks, if the National Guard comes there, have a box ready with your essential items in it. Because if the National Guard comes knocking, you're gone. And they're like, what do you mean? I'm like, you will have to leave your premises if there's a mandatory evacuation. So have a document box ready, and clean, collect as much rainwater. And then you just sort of all of a sudden realize, wow, this is the stuff of film, the stuff.
Yeah, we learned the hard way about 3 years ago, that there are some things that you just keep handy, and one of those is. And we just keep it stacked down in the basement. We keep about 50 gallons of water.
Yep. And that was the instinct that kicked off in my mind, was collect as much as you could.
Yeah.
The drinking variety and the non-potable variety. And I'll tell you what, though. I have, honest to God, never seen a community come together as strongly as the Midlands of South Carolina. I had people who have drinking water, and you have to understand sort of the city's broken down in sort of these topographical islands. Where we are now, there's very little drinking water, there's very little milk, there's very little food left in any of the stores, and it's very hard to get to other parts of the city. So many of the bridges are shut down because they're afraid that the lakes are so high that the bridges are unstable. But I had people come from far, far way on the other edge of town and just, you know, drop off a car full of bottled water for my community. I've seen people around in my direct community reaching out, helping other people. I've been out, others have been out for me. And my little 7-year-old daughter today was very frustrated because she couldn't go to the Red Cross, she couldn't go to the food shelter because she's not old enough, and she's starting to have a bit of a tantrum saying, I can't do anything to help. And I said, oh, yes, you can. Her school, Timmerman, the school here in Columbia called Timmerman School. It was completely flooded, her old school. It's a wonderful little private academy where the teachers don't make anything. And it's just, it competes on really high levels across the state in chess and mathematics and everything, but they're completely under. And I said, you go home and you make a little drawing. Help my school. That's how you can help. Trust me. She did. She ran home and she threw her jacket on the ground and raced 200 yards back to the house. I came inside, she had her crayons and paper out, and the next thing I knew, she had a drawing, and we had it up on Facebook, and I don't know if that's something you could share with the GoFundMe link.
Absolutely.
And the message board, but I'll tell you what, just a $5, $10 contribution, I don't think I've ever asked for money in my life for any cause. This is a good school. It has produced so many important people in this state, so many good thinkers, so many important community members. It's just, it was started by a woman 50 years ago, old style school, still teaches phonics. That alone is worth a $10 donation. But anyways, if you can put that link up there, the GoFundMe link, to help restore Timmerman School, and not only have you done some good, but you've helped my daughter do some good. And I go back and tell her tonight, hey, listen, your drawing had more impact today than anything I did.
I absolutely will. I'll put it up immediately after the program, Eric.
Thank you.
Let me, you know what? What you did in showing your daughter at a tender age how to make a difference, well, you've made a difference that will reverberate down the years in her life and maybe into the next generation for all we know. This is the kind
of thing. I'm used to people ignoring me at this point, but they won't ignore her.
let me expand the discussion, if I may, into a space that may not be particularly nice or comfortable. You know,
we're used to that, Bob.
After one of these things, of course, we are immediately told not to politicize it, because I guess people don't understand that the polis
is the community. I mean, that's what it means in Greek, right? I mean, you're the Greek scholar.
Yeah. Well, no, you know what I used to, well, after the Oregon shooting, I started posting things and saying, listen, I'm not politicizing Oregon. I'm politicizing the 300 events that happened before it.
Right. Exactly. And so, you know, as our dear friend Carol pointed out to me before the program, Lindsey Graham, of course, wants emergency disaster relief for South Carolina, and me being a big government liberal, I think South Carolina should have it, because I think that's what it means when we say we the people in order to provide for the general welfare, right? Yeah.
Well, I'm grateful, despite the attitude of some down here, that you think that for us. Thank you.
I don't think anybody in the wealthiest nation on earth, as we are often called. And sometimes I question the metric involved. I don't think we need to leave our fellow countrymen, and South Carolina still is a member of the United States of America, no matter how desperately some there may wish otherwise.
Correct.
As a big government liberal, those bridges that you say may not be safe, when the waters recede, I want us to make sure they're not only safe, but better than they were before the storm.
Yeah, I have to cross them. My daughter will be on them.
Whilst I was down there, drove across one, across some really big-ass lake on the way into Charleston, and Berg and I looked at each other and said, wow, that is one big-ass lake. And the bridge was kind of discomforting, but that's okay. We need to make sure that's safe. We need to make sure people have drinkable water. We need to make sure the toilets flush. I mean, if a country like the United States is down to...
Hey, let's make sure they have health care, too.
Yeah, while we're at it, sure. We got a list.
why can't we treat the expansion of Medicaid as much of a disaster? Well, we're talking about thousands of people dying every year because they don't have health care. It's the same thing. Let's take care of our own, be it health or infrastructure or emergency aid. Let's not exclude.
Yeah, maybe we ought to rethink that whole motto of one nation under God. Maybe we ought to rethink that and maybe make it we take care of each other. Because I think maybe if there's a deity, he might actually approve of that, or she.
Yeah, or maybe just, yeah, instead of in God we trust on the dollar bill, how about just reverence for life and, you know. And that, for many people, including God we trust. But let's just make sure we can take care of everyone. All right, yeah, I like that.
But, I mean, I like can we, this is supposedly a 1,000-year event, which means actually, as Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen explained earlier on the Green News Report, it means basically there was a 1 in 1,000 chance of it happening.
Well, and as we get on here, having changed our world environment somewhat, perhaps it's not quite so 1 in 1,000 years anymore.
Well, that's the sneaking suspicion I've got. These aren't 1 in 1,000. These aren't 1,000-year events anymore. These are Tuesday.
Yeah, you're right.
But much as you know, because you and I work within this idiom, much as Pharaoh of old's heart was hardened. Is anything going to make the light come on for a Lindsey Graham, or God knows a Nikki, a Nimrata Haley, or any of the other?
Joe Uli Wilson did not vote. Joe Uli Wilson said no to Hurricane Sandy relief.
Absolutely.
I wonder what he'll say this time. Representative Jeff Duncan said no to Sandy relief. So did Lindsey Graham. He's not in that boat alone. They all said no to helping out their neighbors. They all said no to helping out Chris Christie's state. What are they going to say this time?
And will that one in our White House, the secret Kenyan Muslim, will he come down there and hug Lindsey Graham? I think he should just for the shock value.
Bob, if I were in a joking mood, or even half to pass the bill, I usually am. All the jokes, but I'll just instead say, you know what? I think Obama is so much of a gentleman, and so much of a mature politician, he'd be happy to come down here. And those in turn the other cheek once more, yet again, and lend a helping hand, a hand of comfort, a hand on the shoulder to those who have done nothing but curse him these many years. We all know he would do that. I don't know, Bob. It's just, you know, when you're in the middle of the thing, you're right. You don't want to politicize it. But at the same time...
How do you not?
You don't want what's already a tragedy to become a worse tragedy because a bunch of politicians might not vote to help pay for relief. And if they pay, and if they vote to pay for your relief, then they might not do it for the next neighbor next time. Because it's not just saving us. You know, there's going to be a tragedy tomorrow. There's going to be one next month and next year. And we want our leaders to reach out and say yes to relief for all of our neighbors, not just the ones here. Let's just make this a consistent thing while we're at it. Let's just help all of those who need health care, all of those who need emergency medical aid, all of those in need. Let's build the
everybody. Let's talk in concrete, practical terms. We were talking about the dams a few minutes ago, Eric. What of them? I mean, was this a matter of dams being overtopped, or was this a matter of and see, once you overtop a dam, especially the earthen variety, they tend to crumble.
Yeah.
So are we looking at needing?
I think the questions that will come in the future are what were they designed for, and was that the best possible thing to design them for? Those are, you know, those are questions of engineering and politics and policy.
But I mean,
are they gonna
have to be rebuilt?
Well, unless you just grow webbed feet, yeah. I mean, we're looking at the dams are broken, and if they're not rebuilt,
and I'm guessing maybe the Daughters of the Confederacy.
You just have a few more lakes.
I'm guessing the Daughters of the Confederacy don't quite have the human power to get out there with the bucket brigades and just start carrying baskets of earth to rebuild the dam now, do they?
Probably they don't. Oh, man. I'll tell you what.
Because, see,
at the base level, the average human being in a crisis, I think you do see the politics sort of melt away.
Well, they do.
In the immediate moments of need, you know, my Muslims and myself confessed, Bubba, neighbors, hold hands and help one another. It's funny how that works, and then when everything's calm again, the enemy making picks back up.
Well, and that's my point. I've got a working knowledge of what you're going through. Okay, I really do. To one degree or another, and so in the midst of that, you don't need, you know, your personal reserve of snark is probably exhausted. But I will say this much, because I've said the same thing in different circumstances. That wasn't just a flood of water that ran through Colombia and inundated Colombia, Eric. That was a flood of conservatism. That was a flood of Pennywise and Pound Foolish. Was it not?
I don't think I can make that judgment quite yet for one fact. I don't think anybody ever thought that much rain was possible. And I don't personally, although I don't have an engineering background, I can't personally blame anybody. But what I think the thing to blame is what will happen in the coming days when it comes to aid and when it comes to rebuilding the infrastructure. Now, well, that's when politics really starts to come into play. Well, what are we going to do about these bridges? What are we going to do about these roads? What are we going to do about these schools? We're going to have to spend money to make this happen. And we're not just going to have to spend our own money. We're going to have to spend Uncle Sam's money. What's our position going to be?
Yeah, I mean, people in L.A. and New York and Boston and Dallas and Chicago and out in the rural hinterlands, we're all going to pay to rebuild the infrastructure of South Carolina.
And people like you and me think that's a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, and not complain about it. Right. But you know what? Out in Oklahoma, I guarantee you, I haven't seen the story, but I guarantee you, based on past practice and past behavior, the Jim Inhofe is saying, well, we can't help South Carolina unless we offset some federal government spending somewhere else. I suggest right. cutting the budget of the EPA.
Yeah, and that's where...
It's like these idiots don't realize we print our own money.
Right, well, when you get to that point, then you can't. Politicization is it's unavoidable because...
Yeah, well, that's not me politicizing it, Eric. That's them politicizing it.
No, but you know, it's like this, somebody once told me, you know, people, you know, being apart from nature, and I froze in my truck, what are you talking about? Well, you know, mankind isn't part of nature. It certainly is. And they looked at me and said, what, you mean to tell me that Velveeta cheese and quilts? And I said, absolutely. Well, human beings are not separate from nature. We're part of nature. And to the same extent, politics is part of this situation. You can't get away. Who do you look to for answers? The governor gives a press conference. The mayor gives a press conference. The council people are working their tails off. That's government. The city manager is not going to sleep for weeks. That's government. That's politics. We talk. You know, the thing is that we talk about politics like it's a bad thing. We don't, but many do. Politics is a bad thing. Don't make it about politics.
But Eric, that's what comes.
Good thing.
That's what comes of a generation of being people of people being told. I mean, remember Ronnie Reagan said, the nine most dangerous words in the English language right. are, I'm from the government, and I'm here to help.
Well, I thought it was Ronald Reagan, President of the United States of America.
that's a generation being taught that government right. is an other, when in fact the entire nature of this experiment, this 200-year-plus experiment, is the question of can we govern ourselves?
Yeah. Politics is not bad. Government is not bad. And in the crisis, that's who we are looking at. And by the way, what we're looking at crumbling or staying strong are government facilities, government bridges, government dams, government roads. Politics.
Otherwise known as our bridges, our right. dams, our roads.
Right. So, I mean, in a crisis, of course, you hesitate. You hesitate because you look at your neighbor suffering. And by the way, if I have in any way, shape, or form made it to be like I am in any kind of state compared to some of my neighbors who've lost homes, I know people who've had friends and family whose lives already, I am not in that position. I consider myself quite fortunate. To be dry, even if can't take a shower right now. Big deal. I have my life. I have my things. I'm so grateful.
When nobody can shower, everybody smells the same.
Yeah, I engaged in French mode this morning and found the cologne. But that's okay.
Yeah, that's what we called back in college being on the clean team. Yeah, I'm still clean. Yep, still clean.
And you know, you try and find a little levity because it'll destroy you if you stare at the thing too long without blinking. You have to find the dark humor in it. You have to balance the tears with a smile.
And you know what? For a generation, people will be telling the story down there of how we all came together during the Great Flood of 2015. I mean, I say that with my cornpone accent, but it's true because people are this will events like this will expose the best and the worst in people.
I have a lot of friends from Iraq now down here. I tell you what, they're going to be going back to Baghdad telling people about the Great Flood of 2015. I've never seen anything like it.
More water than I have ever seen in my life. Yeah.
You know, not since the days of Noah, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, he was from that neck of the woods.
It's easy to see where these myths come from, right?
Sure.
It's something.
I mean, when it's water as far as the eye can see, you can only assume that the whole world got flooded. And then you get out your wet clay tablet and you jot it down in cuneiform, and there you go.
Think of 2015. It's almost the year of South Carolina. We caught the world. The world was watching us earlier in the year when the flag came down. Through horrible, tragic events, of course. We've endured yet another tragedy in this state. You know, once again, we came out of the flag, and the spirits were strong to make a difference in life, to make this place a better place. I think we can come out of this storm in 2015 at the tail end in the same direction. This is an opportunity for us to make South Carolina a better place,
yeah,
to come out of it with a positive, healthy attitude toward government, toward community. You know, I really, there's a part of me right now that just wants to be positive and think, you know what, some of these really deeply rooted anti-government soapboxers have to deep down in their heart at this point go be saying to themselves, maybe it's just not the right thing. Maybe there's something to that whole progressive thing. You know, progress doesn't feel so bad when you dip yourself in it. It's a hell of a lot better than barbarism. But I'll tell you what, civilization crumbles really fast, really quickly in situations like this. And you got to fight hard to maintain it. You know, instinct kicks in. Suddenly you find yourself collecting rainwater. In 2015, United States, suddenly you find yourself going, oh, well, how do I flush the toilet again? If the water goes out.
Right. That's
how long do I need to boil my water before I drink it? You know, what's the smell factor before I really just got to do something about it? How can I get a logistical chain going for 2% milk from one end of the town to the other? You know, post it on Facebook. Where's the water distribution point for the day?
Take a hint from the U.S. military. Baby wipes are your friend.
Oh, I learned that the first time I changed a diaper box.
Well, but the Pentagon spent millions figuring that out.
That's because they're not allowed to recruit infants yet. Oh, there you go. Whew.
But meanwhile,
while I got everybody's attention, I'm going to just shamelessly plug one more time. It's a little tiny private school here in Columbia called Timmerman School, T-I-M-M-E-R-M-A-N.
Absolutely.
A GoFundMe page called Restore Timmerman School. My daughter did a photo tonight, which I think you'll post on the website, plus the link to the GoFundMe page. Please consider even a $5, even a $2, a $10, anything, any amount you can give. This little private school is filled with wonderfully dedicated faculty that make next to nothing, but over a generation, been producing some of the brightest students in Columbia, South Carolina, and we need bright students. We sure need them. I'm tired, Bob.
I don't doubt it.
I've been trying to write the fifth and final edition of my civilization piece for Four Progressives for the last week, and I keep sitting down every night, falling asleep at the keyboard, waking up going, well, I'm not really writing it. I'm sort of living it. Where's the oil lamp and the quill?
And just as we wrap up, we mentioned politicizing. This is about as sleazy as it gets. Michelle Bachmann, 1L Michelle, she tweeted earlier today some photographs of Columbia. the waters. And she said, U.S. turns its back on Israel, disasters following.
Oh, my God. Any human being outside of a mental health professional studying such psychotic, inane... She puts the twat tweet, doesn't she?
You said it.
I don't know what else to say.
I didn't.
I don't know what else to say.
Eric, I will get the link up on social media right after the program.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you. And thank you for the thoughts out there. Many donations from all over the country, even the world, will take. And thank you for committing some of your resources to us. And we promise in turn to do the same for you when you need them.
Indeed, indeed. Eric, be well. Take care.
Thank you, Bob.
And give a big hug to your wonderful little 7-year-old daughter.
I will. Good night.
Bye now. Our dear friend Eric Bjorn calling in from Columbia, South Carolina, beset by a climate change disaster. So here's where we wrap up. Thank you very kindly for your time this evening. I hope you enjoyed the conversations as much as I did. Prayer meeting Wednesday tomorrow. We didn't raise any funds this evening, but and I didn't get to it in a timely fashion, but there is a challenge on the table going forward. Joan wrote in and said, I'll send $50.79 for a match of the same. Any other odd cents amount will be matched too. Glad you're back. Missed you a lot. And I missed y'all a ton. So thank you. Thank you, Joan, and thank you, one and all, this entire community. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox in Australia, for all you do. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.